Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This episode of the Golf Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. WynnBET is now live in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Michigan, Jersey, New York, Tennessee, and Virginia. From boosted same game parlays to live in-game odds, WynnBET has what you need to win. You bet $100, you get $100 at WynnBET.com. Or download the WynnBET app and start winning today. State restrictions do apply. And we're also brought to you by the Sports Gambling Podcast Final Four Watch Party. This Saturday, sweat out your bets and win prizes with Ryan, John, and Colby over on youtube.com/sportsgamblingpodcast. All right, D-Gens, welcome back to we're going to do a little recap because Steve, the God of Golf himself, has some touting to do for the match play, but it's going to be the Valero Texas Open preview as well. It's your boy, Boston Capper, and the aforementioned hitting a fucking winner over 40-1, God of Golf himself, Steve. You must be feeling good, dude.
You know, I am. I mean, it's bittersweet that we're going to put this thing into the ground, but
it's coming back.
It's coming back. Are you sure about that?
I'm positive.
You're really confident that these guys are going to, you know, actually have the intelligence to bring this back? Because that was very enjoyable watching yesterday. Today was a little bit of a clunker, but although
it was fine.
The semis were great. The finals are always The finals are always a mess. I mean, these guys are tired to that point. I ended up taking my kid to the park for the finals, kind of hoping secretly that I'd have a little bit of, you know, dad karma that, have a loving, attentive father. Maybe the gambling gods will pay me back. And they did with a very easy 6-5 win for Sam Burns. So my third outright since January 1st, fifth of the year. We're doing pretty good rolling to the Masters with another winner here.
Yeah, man, I'm excited for the Masters next week. Not so fucking much. I don't even think it's Valero's fault. Like, the golf course itself is fine. Mm-hmm. The field sucks, but I feel like anything between match play and the Masters is going to be completely like, yeah, who gives a fuck? Let's get to the Masters.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, think about the schedule these guys have been playing. You've had, like, how many elevated events between the Super Bowl and now? Yeah,
four.
Phoenix, Riviera. No, it's actually
API.
API players.
The players and now WGC. Yeah, so
it's a lot. It's a lot of golf these guys have been playing. You got the Masters. So, I mean, there's a couple of good guys in this field. We'll get to it in a little bit. But all right. So, I mean, like, you know, other than like Sam Burns winning, what are some of our takeaways you have from match play as far as like guys you watched? I mean, I watched a little bit. I watched mostly on Saturday because I was on vacation. I guess talk to me a little bit of like things you saw, you know, between like Wednesday and Friday that, you know, maybe you might impact how you feel about them going to the Masters, maybe.
I mean, Jordan was disappointing. I would say my biggest takeaway is like, man, Scotty's like a cockroach, man.
Oh my God.
The fact that Bert, like he really is. Like he is impossible to kill. He got super, I mean, really, Burns got super lucky that Scotty missed that little bunny four footer. You know what I mean? Like down three doesn't matter. Down three comes back. Like Scotty is just a fucking killer. And Rory's driver is fucking impressive.
It is impressive.
Like I'll equate it to this. I don't know. Not everybody's going to get this, but when the Sox traded for Manny Ramirez, every at bat was must see. Like everybody would literally stop what they're doing and like run to a TV. Hey, what's Manny going to do? That's how I kind of feel. Like, all right, what's Rory going to do with a driver, especially on like a drive from a par four or like a scoreable par five. Like I want to see what he does with that fucking thing. It's, I, I, I always thought John Rahm was the most impressive, but I know it's recency bias, but man, what he did with the driver this weekend, fucking incredible.
Yeah. I mean, what's, I guess, good for him is that usually when you shorten your shaft, you can't hit it as far. Yeah. It seemed like that didn't affect him, but you're also more accurate usually.
Yep.
And man, that thing really is a weapon. You're right. I mean, everything is just like right down the middle. It seems like he could work it both ways whenever he wanted. Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty dangerous for a couple weeks at Augusta.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, especially because, you know, typically longer hitters have done a little better there. And the fact that, you know, he's all, you know, he's still pretty good around the green. He seemed like he putted a little better this week too with the putter change.
He missed a bunch of putts today. He missed a bunch of putts
today. Yeah, I mean, but I saw him make a lot of putts yesterday though.
Yeah, I was gonna say, but overall, like I think the putter definitely, because he switched that too. He's on a different Scotty now, right?
Yep. Yeah, he went back, I think, to an older model per se. I think he put everybody on notice this week. That he needed that too. Like he was starting to get lost in the shuffle of, like, you know, Rahm and Scheffler, and now it seems like Rahm is a distant third now of the,
Yeah, I mean, he lost to Ricky. Who did he lose to? And he lost to Billy Ho, right? Did Billy Ho beat him on fucking Friday?
I think he did he tie? Maybe I don't.
No, he lost.
I forget who it was. All right, he so lost to Ricky.
Yeah, lost to Ricky.
You're right. You're right. Billy. He did lose to Horschel.
Yeah. Like, that's kind of disappointing. But Billy's one of those guys, like, I'll give Rahm a pass. Like, Billy's one of those annoying match play guys that I can see him taking it more seriously than Rahm, because Rahm wants to wear that green jacket type shit. Mm. I mean, we were wrong on a bunch of our narratives, right? Can't lay played good. Finau played good. Fucking, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. I don't know what I really think my biggest takeaway is Scotty's a killer. Rory's driver is a fucking problem. And I mean, I don't know, man. Like, we were talking about it, like, this Masters card might be fucking three guys and call it a goddamn day.
It seems like it. I mean, like, do you really think anybody, like, I mean, we always kind of like lump these guys together, and like the last guys towards the end was like your Sam Burns, like Tom Kim, like off there. Like, do you actually see anybody like past that in the Masters?
No shot either. No, I think Xander did really well this weekend. I think that helped. That had to help his confidence.
Yeah.
I mean, he lost on 18 to Rory. You know what I mean? Like, he was right there. He was dominating. He dominated the group play. I think Xander got a nice little confidence boost. I wasn't worried about playing Haddon at the Masters anyway. But I mean, fucking Wednesday morning pre-shot, like on the range, he hurts his hand.
I know.
I immediately went out and bet. It was McNeely. I remember who he was betting. I immediately went out and bet against that. I was like, yep, go ahead and place that. But I go light on that because I've gotten burned by golf injuries before. So,
Well, it'll be telling with it because he's in the field of Valero. So it'll be telling to see if that's actually really hurt or not if he stays in. I mean, if he's in this week, then probably all systems go.
Yeah.
But I mean, regardless, though, he's not on my Masters radar either, because of all his comments he's made about the golf course. So
it's too hard. Shut up.
There were some guys I saw battling injuries. So let's start with right at the top. So Zalatoris played like crap and then withdrew on Friday. I forget the exact reason, but
it was because we all know why. Why go out and play another fucking 18?
Right. So his comments have been he wants to get ready for April, essentially the Masters. Yeah. But ever since that fourth place finish at Genesis, he has gone backwards.
No.
So I'm not totally sure exactly. Did he hurt himself again? Was the what happened at Genesis was just a fluke?
So our boy Joe made a very, very astute observation on Twitter. He was like, I'm getting very Matthew Wolf. I fucking hate being on the golf course right now vibes. Mm. He just looked fucking miserable. So I don't know if you saw it when he missed one of the putts on Wednesday or Thursday. It was, it was like a little 3-footer. He literally like visibly angrily, like went to go try to get the ball back to redo it again and missed it. And like, he does not look like he is having fun on the golf course right now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's not a great attitude to take to Augusta.
No.
So you got that. Hideki.
Yeah, no. No more Decky. No.
You know, I think this is the stance to take with Hideki. I think some weeks he's going to be feeling good. Some weeks he's going to be feeling bad.
Yeah.
You just
good luck. Good luck guessing.
Yeah. So if you miss, you miss. There's 150 golfers to bet on every week. So I don't know. And then Tom Kim was wearing, I guess, medical tape up his forearm.
Yeah. I don't know.
Did anybody talk about that?
I didn't pay too much attention to it. I don't know, but BK's in here saying how bad the event was. That is an incorrect take. Sunday sucked. Like,
yeah,
the final like round always sucked. The rest of it's good. Yeah, it all. But the rest of it's always good.
Did you just lose
a bunch of matchups, BK?
All right, this morning was good. I mean, both of them went to a goddamn playoff.
Oh my god! Yeah,
yeah. The afternoons are always terrible. It's what it is.
Oh, he's talking about Valero. Yes, Valero is fucking terrible. Oh, we already addressed it, BK. We already addressed it.
It's not that bad. I mean,
that's why we're still talking about match play.
I mean, Honda was much worse in this field. There are some names up at the top that's okay.
I guess until they withdraw. What we got? We got Siwoo, Corey Connors.
All right, you want to go over it?
Hatton.
All right, let's just transition right to Valero, the field. Then we'll take a break.
That's fine.
Listen, man, it takes a lot for me to admit a field is bad. I love all these golfers, but
listen, it took me a year and a half to get him to not cover fucking John Deere.
That's true. But you know what? We always never cover the Zurich.
Mitchell already withdrew.
Yeah. Did he really? Well, that's just, all right. There goes one outright. I wasn't gonna bet. All right. So let's get to who's in the field. All right. How about we talk about a guy who's absolutely not withdrawing? Ricky. Ricky's not going to withdraw because this is his last chance to get to Augusta. He needs to win. Not get in the top 50. He had to, I think, advance out of group play in order to have a shot.
And Billy Horschel was like, fuck you, buddy.
Exactly. So that'll be the big storyline with Ricky.
Oh, yeah.
I think Hatton's probably going to withdraw. I'm going to guess probably Hideki's going to withdraw.
Yep.
Keith already withdrew. So
Corey Connors and Siwoo Kim.
Your tournament favorite might be Ricky, to be perfectly honest.
No. Siwoo Kim and Corey will have shorter numbers.
You want charity bet that?
No. Because I don't know what the books care about liability and blah, 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 blah. Corey Connors has a good course history. Yeah. So.
Well, yes, he's won.
Yeah,
but Ricky withdraw is going to draw a lot of popular, I guess, bets.
I'll throw $20 on it just for the story, get it back to the masses. Why not?
Why not? When's the last time that's actually worked out for somebody though?
Like a
legitimate name.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I can only think of one instance: Ian Poulter at the Houston Open a couple of years ago. We beat poor Bo Hostler in the playoff. Yeah.
Yeah. So does Matt Wallace get to fucking play Augusta?
He does. You know what? I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure if the Corrales counts anymore towards getting in. They might have got rid of that rule.
Good for Matt Wallace, huh? Fucking up off the mat.
I know. I wish I actually paid attention because I think I would have bet Matt Wallace. He would have bet on my radar.
I know, me too. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, oh, he's definitely somebody I would have bet.
Yeah.
I know everybody else was betting like Wyndham Clark. One of the Dutch kids was up on top for a while.
You mean the Denmark, the Højgaard.
Yeah. Dutch kid. Okay, Wallace will also withdraw.
Kershaw, why don't you take the week off from your show doing content? I mean, if you're that mad about all this. All right. So we got Chris Kirk, Corey Connors, Taylor Montgomery in this field too.
All right. Chris Kirk will go off at what? Like 22-1? This is gonna be a fun week.
Taylor Montgomery probably 25 or actually probably less than that, probably 20-1 at this point. Davis Riley's playing well. He's probably gonna be up there too. I think he's playing this event. Listen.
Great.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So, whatever. All right. So why don't we take a break, and then why don't I start talking about the golf course a little bit for anybody who cares?
Right. Well, listen. Yeah, I mean, listen. People still care, man. There's money to be made, right? We bet golf every week. It doesn't matter how bad the field or how bad the course is. All right. Well, listen. WynnBET is the official online sports book of the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. WynnBET is now active in Massachusetts, which screws up my ad read that I've been reading for so long. Throwing an extra state in there is really messed up. And tons of other states. Be on the lookout for the WynnBET Win Hour each Thursday from 5 to 6 Eastern Time. During the WynnBET Win Hour, my key games of the week. We'll have better odds on WynnBET, giving you a larger payout opportunity. And March Madness is still here, and there's so many ways to bet on the big dance. You sign up today, you receive a special offer. You bet $100, you get $100. There's a limited state availability. And of course, for our DGens only, if you hit the biggest long shot parlay of the week, you get $1,000 in free credit. There's so much to choose from, and all you got to do is head over to WinBet or download the WinBet app. Offer is subject to change. Terms and conditions at winbet.com. Must be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WinBet is available. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. And listen, if you guys are going to look to hang out with Sean and Ryan at the Stadium Swim and watch the biggest golf tournament in the world, you can win a 3-night stay at Circa Las Vegas to hang with the guys. The contest is completely free to enter. You just got to go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/golf party. And if you don't win the contest, you can still get a discount on a room using promo code SGP50. And the Final Four watch party is also going virtual. Hang out with our guys on the YouTube channel for the entire Saturday of Final Four action, live bets, prize giveaways, and much more. Subscribe to the YouTube.com sports gaming podcast and tune in on Saturday.
Okay. All right. And then one last thing before we start getting to the golf course. So we have some inventory we need to offload from our warehouse. We have a TaylorMade Stealth 2 driver that we will give away at the Masters if we get a little bit of your help. So if we get 20 Apple reviews, 20 Spotify reviews, and 20 more subscribers on our YouTube page, we'll give away the driver. So go do all three. Go check out our Twitter page. We'll have information about how to do that if you don't know how to do it already. You'll have a very handy link that'll send you to all three. So go ahead and do that. You know, support the show, and we'll get back a little bit to you too.
Boom.
All right. Let's talk about an ant golf course.
Yeah, it's an ant golf.
The only thing
I remember last year, they grew up the rough more to try to simulate Augusta. Is that right? No,
that's made up in my brain. That's like a backwards wrong statement right there.
Yeah, so that's what I said. According to my brain.
Okay, well, you don't grow up the rough to simulate Augusta because the Augusta rough is an inch and a half.
That's right. Right, correct.
Yeah. So they overseed it to try and replicate Augusta. The problem is, though, because of global warming, all the carbon in the air, it's that February and March were so warm and so hot that apparently all the Bermuda is starting to come up. We'll talk about agronomy a little bit. We kind of saw the last couple of weeks, though, that this isn't really true overseed anymore. So
we'll
push that to the side. But what's up with the golf course? So first off, we're back to a Greg Norman golf course. Pretty awkward,
yeah.
You know, I mean, considering all the things he's going on. By the way, at my parents' house, there is a painting in their bathroom of Greg Norman. And I didn't know they were big Liv fans, but apparently.
Did you ask your father about it?
No, I didn't. I think it just came with the house, but I was like, oh, that's strange. You know, there's the shark looking at me as I, take a crap here.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So, all right. So this is a Greg Norman. Look, we have a lot of Greg Normans on the schedule. We got Vedanta Vallarta. We got Mayakoba. If you go to DP World Tour, you got Jumeirah Estates. I mean, there kind of is what it is. They're a little over-bunkered. Some of the bunkers can be a little difficult. We'll talk about that a little bit. Especially with this course, let's start with some positives, okay? I've been very negative about this place for a while. Yep. I had a member reach out to me last year, actually provide some helpful information to me. Listen, I'm going to say some nice things about this golf course. It's in immaculate shape. The grounds crew does a really good job of this place. Really good condition greens. They do a really good job getting ready for a tournament play. Greg Norman actually, to his credit, wanted to create a little more of a rugged look to a TPC golf course. Some of them look very manicured. This definitely looks a little more like, you know, it blends into the natural surrounding terrain. So he did do a pretty good job with that. There's also a very nice hotel right at the top of the hill. It's a Marriott. They have a sick pool. They have a lazy river. They got some water slides. So, I mean, this is probably a good, like, you know, some PGA Tour pros like to go to, you know, Punta Cana, or they go to Mexico, they bring their families. This is, you know, even though it's San Antonio, there's a lot of things for the families of, you know, some of these players, kids and everything, to do while they play. So,
yeah,
I mean, I think that's one of the allure of this tournament is, like, the accommodations are very nice for these guys.
Good for them.
All right. Let's talk about some negatives. It's kind of a repetitive golf course. So essentially, it is built on the side of a hill. It's done that because Greg Norman wanted to essentially have offsetting effects of either downhill shots that are into the wind or uphill shots that have a helping wind. So it's like that over and over and over. There's only one hole that actually plays along the side of the hill. Everything else runs basically north, south, south, north.
Okay.
So it's kind of reminds me a little bit of Firestone, where everything was just like, all right, we're going straight. Okay, we're going the other way. All right, we're going straight again. Oh, we're going back the other way. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
All right.
Kind of repetitive. You know, a lot of these drives, you know, basically off the tee, you're kind of similar, seeing a lot of similar stuff. I think it's kind of all in front of you. You got a fairway bunker to worry about. Reminds me a little bit of Torrey Pines in that respect. Not necessarily like all the attributes that you need to do well at Torrey Pines, but just like, okay, you know, it's the longest par four. It's downhill. I saw this couple holes go, oh, this is now uphill. Like, you know, crap like that. You know, we'll talk a little bit off the tee in a little bit, but yeah, you know, that's kind of Greg Norman in a nutshell. I don't think he's the most imaginative architect. But this is a good test for a lot of these guys. Scoring can be pretty difficult here, as we'll get to in a little bit, especially when the wind is up. And it looks like, what, look at the weather forecast. At least 3 out of 4 days looks like there's going to be a little wind. So
okay.
What I want to talk about, though, actually, you know, we'll save it. Why don't we get to the, you know, the golf course? So we'll just get right to it. So TPC San Antonio plays a little bit over 7,400 yards. Standard PGA Tour par 72 setup. 10 par fours, 4 par threes, 4 par fives. The average score since 2015 is about 0.44 over par. That's the 12th toughest on the PGA Tour. Now, some years, it can play very difficult. I think back in 2015, when Jimmy Walker won this, the average score is about plus 2.5 over par. Last year played under par. And in the year Corey Connors won, I think it played almost a stroke under par. So it really depends on the wind conditions, how this thing is going to play. Some years can be a birdie fest. Some years, you know, par is basically at a premium. So, like I mentioned, the property is built, the golf course is basically built on the side of a hill. Either everything plays directly downhill into the wind or uphill with the wind. The problem, though, is if the wind is coming from the north, these uphill shots are basically unplayable. There's going to be one day, it looks like it's going to be a north wind, not very heavy, but some of these par fives that we get to are pretty long to play uphill. Without that helping wind, it's going to be very tough to reach it into. So let's talk about the par threes first. So it's number 3, number 7, number 13, number 16. So hole number 3 that plays downhill, it played every, you know, first couple rounds it played about 155. The last two rounds over the weekend it played about 175. So they lengthened a little bit after the cut. Hole number 7 plays uphill. That plays as long as about 200 yards, plays short about 170. They move the tee box around depending on the wind. Number 13, that plays downhill, that is a very long par 3. I played as long as 249 last year. Now it's downhill. So, you know, if you negate it a little bit because of the headwind, but playing it downhill helps. As short as 205, that's a, you know, so a longer par 3. And number 16, that actually is Greg Norman's take on the 6th at Riviera. It's got a bunker right in the middle.
Right.
So, I mean, it's an interesting hole. You know, sure. The greens can be pretty difficult. It plays between 180 and 195. So, overall, though, these par 3s, you know, they play about even par. It's about average difficulty in terms of PGA Tour. Nothing really a whole lot to it, other than the fact that maybe with some of your proximity stats, seems like most of these are between like 175 and 200. Okay. So, and part, you know, we'll talk a little bit later, the proximity stats. It's kind of a tricky week for it. I'll get to why in a little bit. All right, par fours. So most of these par fours are about moderately length, about 70% of them between about 375 and 475. Only about 4 holes played under 375. Only one of them is actually drivable. That's the 17th hole. That plays about, you know, 366. They actually moved the tee box to 300 last year. That's downhill. You see guys try and go for the green. It can be kind of a tricky tee shot. If you want to go for the green, because you got to thread it between a couple of bunkers there. I think there's some mounds over on the right that can be a little difficult to get up and down. But there really only is one drivable par 4 on the golf course, but there's only one golf hole that plays over 475. And that's number 9. That is uphill. And that is the one that Kevin Na took his infamous 16 on.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And I posted,
I forgot that was here.
Yep. And I posted the video in my article. So if you want to relive that douchebag's, you know, trip around the Texas Bramble, getting a 16 at this place. Ahead and go look at that. So overall, though, I mean, you know, it's a tough scoring tournament. These par fours can play pretty tough. They're the 10th toughest on the PGA Tour. I mean, kind of like, I think I talked about Valspar last week, how, you know, it's a tough place to putt on, but it's closer to the PGA Tour average and some of the really tougher places. It's kind of the same thing. Like, even though it's the 10th toughest of all tournaments with these five events since 2015, close to the average. So you can definitely screw these up, but they're manageable. And then the par fives. These are actually pretty tough, though, and they're interesting. So they're long. Number two, it's downhill, but that played as long as 606 last year. And it's in a south wind, even though it's downhill. You know, it's, you got that resistance with the headwind there. Number eight, that play as long as 620, and that's uphill, but you have the wind to you. So if you have like a 23 mile per hour wind behind you, you can probably reach the green in two. So, you know, but if you don't have any help or the wind's against you, that's a beast of a hole. That's a three shot hole. Number 14 is by far the easiest hole on the golf course. It's downhill, plays as only as long as 570, very short for a par five standard. You know, these guys crushed this thing last year. And then number 18, that's a pretty tricky par five as well. That played as long as 612 last year. That's uphill. It's got the creek that bisects the fairway. It's actually pretty, it's almost the same exact design as the 18th at the Jumeirah Estate course where they play the DP World Championship. Similar concept, long par five, bisects the fairway there. I mean, it takes a kind of a really bad shot to actually hit it in the creek, but there are examples. I posted when Phil Mickelson shot a 10 on that hole a couple years ago. It seemed that the LIV guys had kind of issues with this place. You know, put up big scores. Like, I know Sergio Garcia, he actually was a consultant on this golf course with Greg Norman.
That's right, because he's lives down there, right?
Well, so he lived down there. He also was, I think, engaged to Greg Norman's daughter.
His daughter.
And that went poorly. And he actually avoided this place for a while. So I think that, you know, it kind of speaks to, I mean, like, obviously maybe you don't want to go back to, you know, there's probably some trauma going back to that place, you know, with what happened with Greg's daughter there. But the fact that he didn't actually go play in a tournament kind of speaks to, I think, how he maybe felt about it. So, but these par fives, though, they only played about 0.2 under par since 2015. So of all golf courses, well, these five events in 2015, that's the toughest on the PGA Tour. So it's up there with some major venues. It's up there with a couple other places, like some one-offs where, like, you know, tough scoring conditions, maybe you only see the FedEx Cup playoffs. These are tough par fives. It's up there. These are tough par fives. There's a lot, you know, like I talked about, they're long, you know, some of them are up, you know, a lot, you know, two of them are really long. They're uphill, even though you have a helping wind. On number eight, that's uphill. That has a lot of bramble to the right. So if you miss a shot right, that's basically a penalty stroke. Number 18 has the creek that bisects it. That also plays uphill. So these aren't easy. So
no.
Yeah. And that all adds up to a relatively difficult golf course. I mean, tough par fours, tough par fives. Why don't we'll talk about briefly about agronomy, and then we'll take maybe another break.
Okay.
So I mentioned at the top of the show, we are in overseed season. We have seen, I think, at least five events in a row that have been overseeded. Here's what you've been noticing. Well, I notice. I don't know if you notice. You can tell with these overseeded greens how much Bermuda's in it. So yeah, let's flash back to Amex. So when you look at an overseeded green with no Bermuda on it, it's still dormant. When you kind of see the mowing patterns back and forth, like light, dark, like it's kind of like a striped shirt.
Yeah.
That's all overseeded. Like, you see a lot of sparkles too sometimes when you get like the worm cam. That's the Poa trivialis there. The last couple weeks at Valspar and the Austin and the Players, you can see the grain. Like, you can see the light spots, the dark spots. You know, it looks like you're looking at like Wiley, like the Sony Open. Yeah. Like, when you look at that Bermuda green, like, okay, this is going to be a slow putt, this fast putt. Like, when they actually are mentioning this is into the green, when you oversee the golf course, you're supposed to be taking the green out because it's Poa, it's a vertical growing grass. So the Bermuda is definitely coming back in. Yeah. You can also see it in the rough. Now this, now at Austin, that's just dormant Bermuda that basically turned green. So it's starting to grow. But you know, I know it's a Valspar. You had like the dark green ryegrass, and then you had some splotches of Bermuda every now and then. Same thing at Players. So the GCSAA actually specifically mentioned because it was so warm, a lot of the Bermuda is starting to come up. This is essentially a Bermuda golf course. So it's not going to be a great practice for the Masters because it's going to be a different agronomy. It might not even compare to some other previous Valeros that might have been a little colder where it's mostly overseeded at that point. I'm going to be treating this like it's Bermuda. So when I look at putting stats, I'm not going to look at any of the other overseeded golf courses. And honestly, if you can, we go back to the match play. I'm not really surprised Sam Burns won because it was mostly so Bermuda. Like when he won Valspar, that was very warm tournament in late April. That was essentially Bermuda at that point.
Yeah.
So I'm not really too shocked at that ended up what happening. So I guess when I'm thinking about this, like you think about some guys who are really good on overseeded, like Adam Hadwin. You know, he has a couple of pretty good finishes here. On Bermuda, he stinks. And we kind of saw it a couple of weeks ago at Valspar.
He started last week.
Oh, yeah, last week at Valspar. He's simply really good there. It was mostly Bermuda, and he stunk.
Yeah, he stunk in match play, too. 0-3.
Yeah, so maybe that's something to keep in mind, is that, like, all right, we have a guy that might be a good course fit. He has good course history, but it's different agronomy. Might not work out for you. So I'm treating this like it's Bermuda. You know, I'm going to be like everybody else that just calls it Bermuda and ignores that the overseeded factor. I'm actually going to be one of those people and say, actually, they're right. It is Bermuda.
Yeah, but this time you will be correct with everybody else versus you being correct and everybody else wrong.
Exactly. Basically, they're the blind squirrels that found the nut this week.
That's right.
So, all right. Well, why don't we take another break and then we'll talk about some other stuff.
Yep, perfect. All right, listen, we're also brought to you guys by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog Fantasy continues their March Madness College Pick'em. It's a great way to get in on the action, especially if your bracket is busted. Plus, Underdog Fantasy has your favorite college basketball player props and great NBA and NHL daily games. Head over to underdogfantasy.com. Use promo code SGPN for 100% deposit bonus up to $100. That's underdogfantasy.com. Promo code SGPN. And Steve already said, talked to you guys about the contest we're running for the Stealth Driver. So make sure you get over to YouTube, go subscribe, hit Spotify, Apple, all the spots that you listen to us, man. It helps. Yep. It helps.
Yep. And then let's briefly mention Piper Golf Ball. So I was just in Florida. I had my first round of the year. Went okay. I mean, I struggle around the green and on Bermuda surfaces. It was definitely evident, but you know what? I would have been a lot worse if I wasn't using Piper golf balls, you know, because Piper, you know, even if I hit it a little thin there, gave me a little bit of extra spin, actually helped me check the ball up for my chip and eagle on number 9 on Friday. That was pretty great. So, you know, and these golf balls are, you know, they're helping. It's a company that actually encourages you to play your best game. They have a line of golf balls that basically matches what your handicap is to what you should be playing. So, you know, go to piper.golf/GGP and you'll get a 10% off your first order using promo code GGP. You can opt to subscribe and receive scheduled shipments on golf balls at 50% discount and get free shipping on any orders over $50. So go to piper.golf/GGP and improve your game today.
Bye.
All right.
What else are we going to talk about?
Well, let's talk about all the relative skills and what you need to focus on this week. All right, let's talk about off the tee. Well, I'll zoom through a little bit. My article's out if you want to go into more detail. I'll hit on some of the bigger points. So, you know, listen, Greg Norman is probably one of the best drivers in PGA Tour history. You know, he loved hitting driver, and he designed a lot of his golf courses to be pretty tough off the tee. TPC San Antonio is no exception. It ranks of all golf courses with at least 5 events since 2015. It's the 12th toughest off the tee. Now, it's not really all that penal off the tee. There's only 3 water hazards. The rough isn't really all that penal either. It's only about 2.25 overseeded ryegrass. Now it's basically going to be Bermuda, but even 2.25 Bermuda, it's not really all that significant. So what makes it tough, though, is that like a lot of Greg Norman golf courses, they have really big, intimidating fairway bunkers, like really deep ones, oddly shaped like puzzle pieces. I mean, they're kind of not aesthetically pleasing to the eye. But they're awkwardly shaped. If you end up on kind of like the wrong side of it, it's going to make it into the green pretty tricky. All these greens are really elevated too. So if you're up against the lip, it's going to be hard to actually fly the ball to the green. And they all kind of pinch in the fairway too. Kind of like I mentioned at the top of the show with Torrey Pines. kind of similar concept where, you know, you got to hit it fairly straight. It's fairly long, but, you know, the bunkers kind of pinch in there right in the driving zone. It's very inconveniently placed. You know, that's probably the toughest part about TPC San Antonio off the tee is that these bunkers are pretty tricky. You know, there's also some like rocks and bramble bushes that if you hit into, you know, that can be a little tricky. So all of that, even though hitting into the rough or, you know, missing the fairway in the rough is not that penal. It's the third highest penalty of all golf courses, at least five events in 2015, of hitting in non-rough areas. And that's basically the fairway bunkers. And if you happen to hit it in kind of like the garbage with where all the rattlesnakes and broken bottles and, you know.
Hypodermic needles.
Yes, essentially. So, and then while the fairways aren't all that narrow, they average about 31 yards in width. I mean, the drive accuracy rate is only about 63.7%. While that's above PGA Tour average, it's still the ninth lowest rate of all like regular golf courses. So this is not a golf course where guys hit a ton of fairways here. So, all right, let's talk about iron play. So this is the seventh toughest on the PGA Tour with approach shots. The green regulation rate since 2015 is only about 59.5%. That is the fifth lowest rate of all regular PGA Tour golf courses since 2015. So the primary reason why this is tough to hit the greens is the wind and the elevation change. And it's already a caddy's, you know, like it makes their job difficult to account for wind or if it's an uphill shot, downhill shot. But when you're doing that every single approach shot, like let's say, okay, this is about 20 feet downhill, but it's a 15 mile per hour headwind, trying to figure out which club a guy should use can be kind of tricky. So that's the biggest challenge, I think, of all these approach shots. The greens are also pretty significantly undulated too, so it's hard to access certain pin positions, especially when it is windy. Last year, the average proximity to the hole was 39 feet, 7 inches. That's about 3 feet farther than the average of just everything on the PGA Tour. So guys aren't hitting it really close to the hole. Let's talk about proximity stats. So I posted the chart, and it's fairly consistent every single year. So there's a higher rate of shots under 125, and there's a higher rate of shots over 250, but everything else is basically from about like from basically 125 to 250. It's all pretty spread out, and there's not a huge correlation, like or not a huge like volume of it.
Yeah, gotcha.
I always hate these. You know, distribution charts because there's a higher rate of shots under 125, but it only accounts for about 20% of your approach shots every single round. So it's like what, like four shots? That's not a big sample size. You have a higher rate of shots over 250, but those are all your par fives. So that doesn't really help.
Right.
So I kind of broke it down like this. I end up looking at the yardages of all the par threes and stripping that out of this data. And I just wanted to isolate what the par fours were. And I have come up with seven of the approach shots on the par fours are under 150. And you look at some of the guys who typically do well here. Yeah. A lot of guys are pretty good with their wedges.
Spieth,
Bond, Andrew Kuchar. Landry. Yep, Andrew Landry won. Kuchar, Zach Johnson.
Hoffman was good with his wedges.
Yeah.
Just back in the day.
Yeah, so a lot of guys who are generally pretty good with their short irons tend to do well here. Like J.J. Spawn last year, he had a pretty good, you know, short iron year the previous year. Yeah. Wasn't hitting all that great with his short irons up until that point. So, but there tends to be more shorter approach shots into the par fours. And then a lot of your longer iron shots typically are with your par threes. So I think how I'm going to look at it is I'm going to have to break it up again. So I'm going to look at everything under 150 and say, okay, this is mostly the par fours that I care about. And then between 150 and 200 is going to be mostly your par threes. I think it's three of your par threes and like a handful of par fours.
Okay.
And then anything over 250 is your par fives. Anything under 125 might be a handful of par fours. It also might be if you're out of position on a par five, your wedge shot in. So that might be useful if, let's say, it's 600 yards and you got a head, you know, wind in your face, you can't get there in two. So that might help there. But I think I'm going to look at mostly everything under 150, cover my par fours, and 150 to 200 should cover my par threes.
Okay.
That's it. And then just kind of look in, you know, see how they do in each. That's really the best you can do.
Like it.
Otherwise, yeah. If you just want to look at everything under 125 and go with this, you're looking at like four shots around. That's not going to do it.
It's not worthless. Yeah, exactly.
Right. But overall, though, one thing I noticed, though, last three winners, J.J. Spahn was hitting his irons really well heading in. Spieth was hitting his irons really well heading in. And Corey Connors was hitting his irons really well coming in. If you generally just look for a guy who just riding pretty good irons coming in,
yeah,
it's not bad. So you might need, don't even complicate it. Don't even look at proximity buckets. Just look at, all right, nice. These guys' irons are trending. Let's keep it simple. So,
yeah.
All right. Around the green, this is where I'm going to nerd out. And I'm probably going to bore you, who's had his hands in his head for most of this. Let's talk about greenside bunkers at TPC San Antonio.
I'm all about some bunkers.
Okay. Yes, you are. Apparently, you are as good a PGA Tour pro as you've claimed on this show.
never stated such
thing. I think we need to pull some audio.
You can pull the audio. Okay.
Right. Well, you know what, Cameron, our producer, he's going to go do that. All right. So these have the third toughest greenside bunkers on the PGA Tour.
What makes them so much more difficult?
Well, so here's the thing. So I was sent some inside intel from a member. I forget what your name is. If you're a listener, thank you for sending this. Actually, what you sent was incredibly helpful. I am actually posting a video of their message to the members, exactly what they were doing with the bunkers. So here was the problem with the bunkers. So just in general, how they're constructed, they are well below the putting surface.
Right.
And the greens are really undulated. So it's tough for an average Joe to try and get up from out of them and close to the pin. Now, what also made it complicated, though, was over time, there been a lot of buildup of just sand that's kind of splashed out. It steepened the faces of the bunkers. And the sand they were using was pretty fluffy, didn't compact very well. So what happens when that point, this video was actually very educational about bunker construction, is that when bunkers get too steep, the sand runs down, collects to the bottom. So what happens is you get a lot of plug lies, a lot of sand underneath where you're just not getting any spin. Balls are kind of dead out of them. And I think that's why it was really tough with the bunkers the last couple years. So here's what they did. After the 2021 Valero Texas Open, I'm not sure how much people were actually reporting this. I know I report, well, actually, I may not report it because I think I got food poisoning last year.
You did.
I did. So I'm reporting it now, officially. They redid all the bunkers. They put in a new type of sand. It's called Arkansas White Sand, which actually is not natural sand. It's actually just crushed granite. So it's an angular sand. It's more aesthetically pleasing, but it also is much more compact.
Okay.
It holds a little bit more moisture, and they end up softening some of the faces of the bunkers. And so what happens is you have this sand that's a little more compact. It doesn't run back down into the bottom of the bunkers. So it's going to help you create a little more spin with your bunker shots. So did this actually make a difference? Did it make it a little easier coming out of bunkers? Well, from a scoring standpoint, no. It played about its difficulty. But I did notice, when I'll get to this a little bit, there's a big correlation with guys who are pretty good around the green that had a lot of success at this venue. Now, in terms of actual sand saves, it was kind of a little bit mixed. But in theory, if you have more compact sand, it should help a guy who can better spin the ball out of the bunker.
Makes sense.
Because there's less luck involved. Like, you kind of, right. It's like a couple weeks ago at Bay Hill,
yeah,
where you didn't know if it was a plug lie or not. Here, it's a lot more fair. And if it's more compact, it'd be like, okay, I can handle this bunker shot. Now, it's still tricky because these greens are really severely undulated. If you're on the wrong side, you got no shot anyways. But if you have, a lot of green to work with, like, a really good bunker player should be able to get out of these things relatively easy because it's just going to be easier conditions for them. So looking at sand save percentage, like, if you look at last year's leaderboard, it's definitely a mixed bag. Like, J.J. Spahn's one of the worst bunker players in the PGA Tour. But you had guys like Chris Kirk, you had like Charles Howell, you had A couple other guys who rank pretty highly in sand save percentage in that top 10, like Siwoo's a good bunker player. So you might want to look at it. Generally speaking, though, just target guys are pretty good around the green. That tends to be the biggest correlation. And I'll get to that a little bit with the skill set chart, but generally speaking, really good scramblers do pretty well here. Now, that might be just a profile of guys that typically play this event.
Yeah,
might just be good scramblers in general, but just in tournament, though, there definitely is a correlation between how good you are around the green and where you usually finish. And it's usually more correlated in tougher scoring conditions, which we might see this week with the weather.
Especially if we're going to have wind 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, like I saw gusts possibly up to 40 miles per hour, I think, on Friday. Now, it's going to be a headwind and a tailwind. If you want chaos, you want crosswinds.
I know.
But regardless, though, like if the gust dies,
you see guys miss the wind, hits a gust, and they have the wrong club, and the guy overshoots the green. Like I'm fine with just those little cat crashes. I don't need 10 cat pileups.
Right. So, all right, let's talk about putting. Not really much to talk about here. Obviously, I mentioned before that I'm treating this like these are Bermuda greens. I think that's going to be dominant on these greens now because of the weather. Nothing really write home about as far as like difficulty of putting overall. The putts between 5 and 15 feet and under 5 feet aren't really difficult, but it's the sixth toughest of all putts over 15 feet. So kind of like what we saw at Valspar a couple weeks ago, really undulated greens. Guys aren't making a whole lot of putts.
Yeah.
So it can be kind of difficult to lag putt at this place too, just because of how the greens are contoured. So that might be something to keep in mind. And then lastly, penalties. There's only 3 water hazards on the golf course. There's only 2 holes where water actually comes into play. There's a pond right next to 16, the tee box. It's not in play for any of these guys. It's in play for you and me if we top the ball. But for these guys, it's not. The only time water comes into play is on the par 3 third. There's a large pond right in front of the green. And then number 18 with the creek. The only other opportunity for a penalty shot is if you hit it just in the garbage. Like in the rocks, the canyon or the cactus, whatever. So it features relatively low penalty shots per round. So, you don't have to worry about guy steps to the tee, blasted off the planet. He still has an opportunity to recover.
Yeah.
So, all right. And then let's talk about the skill set chart. So I actually made an epiphany. I put this every week in my article. I think I've been reading this wrong forever. So I don't think it actually measures what types of guys are good there. I think it just measures how you do in tournament and how that correlates your overall total strokes gained. So
I don't think I'm tracking.
So essentially, let's say, there's a standard deviation of how your total strokes gained are from top to bottom.
Right.
How you're essentially able to separate yourselves. Right. So let's say you hit it generally pretty far. That might make up, most of your strokes gained off the tee numbers. Like you're able to gain more in the field, or you hit more fairways. If you do that in tournament, that might not be consistent. Like an accurate guy might not hit as many fairways. It's just in tournament performance.
Okay.
So with off the tee, there's no real correlation to how far you hit it or how short you hit it. Or how many fairways you hit or don't. It generally speaking, it doesn't matter. I don't know how much I'm going to be looking at off the tee this week. It seems like that doesn't really matter. Like if you look at last year's leaderboard.
Yeah.
So you got JJ Spahn, very big hitter. You got Howell who can put it out there pretty good. You got Gary Woodland that's in the top 10. You had Dylan Fratelli, who's a bomber. He can get out there pretty far. But then you got Kuchar, Troy Merritt, Adam Hadwin, Brendan Todd.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot of correlation.
No.
Hey, if you look at the last, through the years too, kind of the same thing. I don't think I'm going to be looking at much off the tee this week. It seems like...
I would agree with that.
Anybody can kind of show up there. All right. And then iron play. It can be a little bit of a mixed bag. Same thing with putting, but around the green tends to be how you do in tournament with how you do around the green that week tends to be a little more correlated to how you do actually in the tournament that week. Now, it doesn't mean bad scramblers can't do well here. They might just have to be a great week, but if you're pretty good around the green in general, you probably have a little bit of a leg up.
Yeah.
So, and it usually is in tougher scoring conditions, the around the green stuff has been a little more important. So like the year that Corey Connors won, around the green didn't really matter all that much because it was really easy. The year that like Jimmy Walker won, or even last year too, which it was a little easier scoring conditions. I wonder if some of the bunker play might have actually made it matter a little more.
Yeah.
But generally when it's windier, it's tougher, guys are missing more greens. How you did around the green that week tended to be a little more indicative of how you actually did for the tournament. And then some years, you know, guys who hit their irons a little better tend to do better in the tournament. How, some guys who maybe were a little better off the tee that week did a little better. It's kind of a little bit back and forth. So I think what I'm going to be looking at more is like, okay, like if you're pretty good around the green and then yeah, a couple other things are pretty good. You know, it's going to help me kind of build a case for guys. Yeah. But I think we're going to start with how you are around the green and then kind of work from there.
Like it.
So, all right.
Like it.
That's all I got.
All right. Fuck it. Well, we got DFS show tomorrow. Do we? And Betty show. It's just us again this week.
Right? We got Matt Gannon coming on Tuesday.
Oh, nice. So the betting show.
Yes,
nice.
We do.
Oh, that poor prick. He caught that bookie sleeping and fucking got those bets negated. That's bullshit. I hate that. But
oh, I thought that was fine. Cameron.
No, I thought it was Matt. Was it Cameron or Matt?
Maybe it was both of them.
I don't know, man. And I got both their numbers saved in, and for whatever reason, in that group text, there's a number that doesn't. Two of the numbers don't have a name attached. I don't want to give away the area code.
Okay, why don't I fix that for you after the show here?
Anywho, fucking all right, man. Fucking DFS tomorrow night. You guys know where to find Steve. Go click on that fucking article. Go give it a read. Especially if he's got the fucking video of the fucking 14. Let's go. I'm gonna go watch that shit. Yeah. Other than that, man, DFS tomorrow. Masters, 2 fucking weeks. Go do what we ask, man. Go do all the subscribes and clicking and all that stuff, man. One of you clowns can win a stealth driver just for clicking buttons. Pretty good fucking deal. Go do it. Later.